The Tom Woods Show, episode 1095.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, let's face it, the public school is the American church, and if you oppose it, you are an incorrigible heretic. Well, I've written a free ebook for all you good heretics out there called Education Without the State. Check it out at nostateeducation.com.
Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here, talking today to Sherry Clark, sometimes known as Sherry Voluntary. She is the host of Speaking Freely over on Talk Radio 92.3 FM, 760 AM, WETR in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we can talk about so many different topics. And as a matter of fact, that is precisely what we are going to do. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
I've had people from the LP of Tennessee say, we have such an asset in Sherry that you've just got to get her on. She is 100% on point. She's top notch. She's great on the radio. I mean, what more could you ask for? So that was all I needed to hear. So I'm glad to be able to talk to you.
Thank you.
you were at the 1,000th episode of this show.
I was.
How about that? Yeah, didn't we have a blast? Wasn't that great?
It was wonderful. Yeah, it was a great time.
I mean, I wish I could do it again for like the 1,100th episode, because that's coming right up. But it's a really big ordeal to put on. So
I'm sure
we'll have to wait for the future. But before we get into, I mean, you can cover a lot of topics given your background, but everybody's always interested in, I don't want to call it a conversion story because we're not a religion, but you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, we all have in some cases, oddball story. We were one thing, then we became another, or we were pretty close, but one thing turned us around. What's your version of that story?
Well, I was a full-on neocon. Like, I really loved, you know, all the things about the military, and just I thought we were always doing the right thing overseas. And I moved to Tennessee when I was pregnant with my son about 15 years ago. And I started listening to a radio show out of Atlanta called The Neil Bortz Show. I don't know if you're familiar with
him.
Oh,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, and he covered eminent domain, which I had never even heard of. And that was sort of what got me thinking in those terms. I think he was the first person I ever heard call himself a libertarian as well. And then, you know, you can fast forward several years later. I thought I was a libertarian for a long time before I actually understood what that meant. But my husband came across a video of yours, actually, on YouTube. And I remember him coming into the kitchen while I was preparing dinner and saying something to me. And I think it was about the draft. And I became an anarchist right then in my kitchen, basically. I'd been sort of working up to it for a while. And I actually felt kind of like I was exercised in a way. It was electric, and I just felt all those dominoes start to fall, because for me, the military was like the last thing I couldn't let go of. So that's pretty much my conversion story.
But that, I think a lot of people listening will be nodding their heads, because that was the last thing for a lot of us. It's the old, I like Ron Paul except for his foreign policy kind of thing.
Yes.
Let's see. So when exactly would you say that you watched that video? Like, when was this process complete?
It was probably around 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago.
Oh, so
yeah.
Quite recent.
Yeah.
Okay. And then how soon after that did you become involved in the Libertarian Party?
I only got involved in the Libertarian Party about, I think, 8 months ago. I really had no interest in being involved in any kind of, you know, electoral politics or parties or anything like that for years, even before I was an anarchist. And one day on Facebook, I got contacted by a guy named Justin Cornett, who happens to be the Libertarian Party region coordinator here. And he's my main co-host now on the show. But he asked me to meet him, have a beer, and talk about the Libertarian Party. And he had to convince me a little bit. I wasn't really into it. And when we met, he said, like, we had this long conversation, but the last thing he said to me was, you know, I really need an anarchist to help teach people about libertarian philosophy. And I was kind of hooked at that point. So that's how I became involved.
Okay. All right. So do you have a particular role in the party?
No, I'm just around. I did a little help recruiting for people, just outreach, basically, I guess is what you could say. That was what I didn't have an actual title or anything. So
how did you come to get your own radio show? I think a lot of people would be curious about that.
Yeah, well, again, that was through the Libertarian Party. So I got a call in, I think it was October, from the Knox County chair, which is just Joshua Eckel. And he asked me if I'd like to do a radio show with him and a podcaster that's hangs out with the libertarians named Alexander Shaw. And they had been contacted by a local radio station who knew them through their work with the party and asked if they might like to fill an evening slot that they had. So that's how it started. And we've had a few changes since then. I didn't start out as the main host, but because of just work and how much time it takes to prepare for the show, I've ended up as the main host at this point. So,
well, I'll put a link up to the show at tomwoods.com/1095 so people can check it out if they're interested.
Thank you.
Let's say a little bit more about the LP. Why not? Once in a while, got to talk about. And I have listeners who couldn't care less about the LP, or at least they say that. But then when I talk about it, they're secretly listening.
Right. You
know, it's a guilty pleasure. They want to know what's going on. And as you know, I mean, I've been dragged very, very much against my will into Libertarian Party drama. I just want to have my podcast and spend time with my kids. My ambitions are quite modest at this point
in my
life.
Man.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, if all you have to do is watch the video, that 1,000th episode, to dispel all the demonizing things they say about me. I'm surrounded by great people. I have great, normal kids who seem like they haven't been raised by the devil, you know, so there's that. But I don't want to make this all about me. I really, really don't. I am totally over that.
Sure.
It's a shame that they say terrible things about me, but that is, unfortunately, in this day and age, the price you pay for being even slightly a public figure.
Right.
But what's, just give me your overall thoughts about the party, because of course there is plenty of disagreement and there are different factions in the party, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens at the convention this year.
Yeah, it's going to be dramatic, I have a feeling. So I haven't been involved in the party that long, like I said, but I think overall it's been really beneficial to me, even though it is extremely frustrating at times. I think it gives someone like me community. When I came to my own, you know, anarchist ideals, I didn't really know that there was anyone else out there, you know, that many people that felt the same way, believe the same way. And so getting involved here, not that there are that many anarchists in this area, but it did give me a foundation for a community. And that's really important, I think, for all of us to understand we're not alone and that not everyone in the world wants to, you know, use violence against us. So it's good. It gives me hope. And then I think it's given me a lot of access to people that I wouldn't have necessarily had access to before, because as soon as I got involved with the party and sort of had people on my friends list with the party on Facebook, people just started like pouring in and friending me. And so I've been able to, you know, have access to talk to a lot of people that I never would have before, a lot of smart people. So I'm still of the opinion that Michael Malice had at the 1,000th episode, which was, you know, you can't spend yourself rich and you can't vote yourself free. So I still am not a real supporter of the voting process and all that, but I don't judge people if they feel that that's the best way that they know to affect change. Like, that's what we're all trying to do. So I enjoy the friendships and the camaraderie that the Libertarian Party has given me, even if it's drama from time to time.
Well, I'm curious about what happens at the local level. On the national level, I know that we have people who pick fights I think for virtue signaling reasons, they pick fights with people like me, who are, I'm very easy to demonize. There's nothing easier in the world than to demonize me and then and then be able to say to the world, look how wonderful and pure I am because I don't like woods. I get it. I mean, that's an easy shortcut to, you know, fame, I guess. It's instead of accomplishing something, you could do that. I get that. But on the local level, do people really sit around and argue about this stuff, or do they just do activist things?
Well, I don't know that my particular local area represents everyone, but I know that I argue with especially the people on the radio show constantly. we argue about, you know, issues all the time, but in a friendly sort of way. But there's, you know, occasional drama or whatever, but, you know, maybe hurt feelings from time to time. But for the most part, yeah, we're just, you know, people who want to get involved, want to be changing our community. So I think that's the common goal. But I think that's drama is something you're going to run into with any group that really cares about something. And I think that's the main thing, is that we all really care. So
what are the sorts of activist things you guys are up to in the LP?
Well, right now, I know that they're working on a bill for civil asset forfeiture reform, which will be amazing. And we protested, of course, the gas tax that was just instituted in Tennessee last year. And it went through, and there wasn't a whole lot we could do about it. But we tried to get out there and let people know that it was not a good thing. And so we had a protest. Other than that, I mean, they've got a lot of different things going on. I know that occupational licensure is another platform that we're working on. I know Justin is really trying to push, you know, getting rid of marriage license in Tennessee, I think. So as a start, sort of low-hanging fruit that is pretty easy to convince people on. So that's as far as I know of what everything that's going on, everything I can think of at the moment.
Well, what about that billboard project?
Oh, yes. So that's the radio show. You probably heard about it. We had a sheriff in White County here, which is not very far from us. He gave the order for his deputy to shoot a man in a low speed chase because he wouldn't stop. He had been driving on a suspended license, and instead of damaging the cruisers, he told them to shoot, that he didn't want his cruisers damaged. So they killed this man. They murdered him. And it's been outrageous, not only because of that, because it's not proportional, but because of the way the sheriff talked about it afterwards. So police abuse is one of my big topics. I really, really hate when people abuse authority that they have. And we just wanted to do something because we could feel almost every show with police abuse stories. So we try not to do that because we're trying to win people in the local area over to, you know, our way of thinking, but it's almost impossible not to talk
about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when that happened, I thought we've got to do something about this. And I was ready to drive over there that night that I saw the video about it. And like, I just wanted to stand out front of the sheriff's, you know, station and hold his own words up to him. And our producer, Daniel Blanchett, he had an idea of, why don't we do a billboard? So it just sort of started from that. We've started a GoFundMe that who's watching the watchers. And we just want to put a billboard up and ask people to hold their, you know, authorities in their area, in their county, accountable and get rid of those people because they certainly don't care about the average citizen. And so we're just wanting to do something because it's so easy to sit by and let it go by. And there's not a lot that we can do, but we thought, well, we can do this.
Absolutely. Now, in my notes, what I'm reading is that the sheriff recently gave the order to use deadly force to end a low-speed chase because he didn't want to damage his police cruisers. He was laughing about it and said he thrives on that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He also invaded a woman's home last year because he was looking for someone. After he had unlawfully entered, he told her he had a warrant. He had an arrest warrant, but no search warrant. When called out on it, he answered, "Nobody got hurt."
Right.
Oh, I mean, this is like a guy we invented. It's hard to believe that's a real guy.
Yes. And I, you know, as much as I'd like to say his callousness is unusual, I don't think his attitude about the law that he is supposedly sworn to uphold is that unusual among police, and especially in small towns. Sometimes large towns, it's the same, that, you know, the laws are for us, and for them, the ends justify the means. So if they don't like something going on in the law, they just step around it and cover for each other. And that's not acceptable. So it's sort of a pet peeve of mine is the people that say the back the blue you hear all the time. And it drives me nuts because I think that that's harmful to them as well as to us.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, I know you have well-formed opinions on the subject of women and libertarianism, and I'm sorry to have to raise this, the idea being, well, you're a woman, so therefore we have to talk about women and libertarianism. But it does come up quite a bit, and there's a lot of discussion about whether the problem is that libertarianism is not welcoming enough in the way that we're promoting it, or is it that libertarian men are unbelievable creeps or disrespectful toward women? And by the way, I will admit, I have seen plenty of that.
Yeah.
I cannot get over some of these young, I don't know who raised these little savages, but I sure wouldn't want my daughters around them. I'll say that. But I don't think that would not account for, because I can't imagine you'd hang around at the Democratic Party and you'd be surrounded by Clark Gable and Humphrey Bogart, you know
right.
what I mean? So I don't think that can be the complete explanation. And moreover, it's kind of a running joke around here that the one time I ran a demographic survey for this show, it came back 93% men. I mean, that was, you know, that was really, that was a tough, tough, devastating bit of news to get. It's quite that lopsided, which, by the way, is one of the reasons I think the Harry's Razor Company likes me, that I in effect have double the audience, because I have basically everybody's a potential customer of Harry's Razor.
Yeah.
So what do you think about all this?
Well, I do think, you know, there are some, you know, so-called creepertarians, you know, that are out there.
Oh, that's such a good word. I don't know why I didn't use that. Perfect.
Yeah. They're out there, and that does exist. But, you know, I see a lot of why women aren't interested in libertarianism blamed on men. And I really think that's sort of unfair. For one, it makes women seem like, well, if a man hits on me, I can't, you know, live and have my being. I have to run away. And, you know, I'm a libertarian no matter what. So I can deal with that. I can handle those guys. And there really aren't that many as a whole. But I think that women just have different values and different things that they care about, and that you sort of have to, you know, we have to make women care about these things. That women typically don't care too much about politics anyways, even though there are so many, you know, women involved in the left, and it really appeals to them. But I think that's because of the care sort of foundation, like Jonathan Haidt's book, The Righteous Mind, which I know you had him on the show a while back. And I've read that book, I don't know, 3 times. And it's one of my very favorites. I think it's a really, really amazing work. And for a long time, I kept thinking, you know, geez, there's got to be a way that this applies to gender as well. Because I've noticed that just in my own life, anecdotally, that women tend to not, you know, say they don't care about politics, but I just think it's that they're not informed in a way that makes them care. And I did like this informal survey on my Facebook page a while back, and I asked my girlfriends, you know, if they enjoyed talking about politics and how they felt about talking politics with men versus women. And most of them said that they didn't like to talk politics because people argue and you're not really changing anyone's mind and, you know, it gets too heated. But the other thing that really surprised me is that most of them said that they preferred to talk to men over women because men tend to not get personal, and they felt like talking politics with their girlfriends sort of damaged the relationships when they had a disagreement. So I thought, wow, that's a really good thing for men. And, you know, it was only about 20, maybe 25 women. So, you know, it's completely anecdotal, but I think it may be more true than not. And so I found recently doing some research, because I've been wanting to connect that to gender for a long time, or sex, you know, as a male opposed to female. And I found this study that had been done last year about sex differences in moral reasoning and the role of intelligence versus life history strategy, which is a psychological term. And so that study led to that for men, intelligence has more of an effect on their moral reasoning. But for women, it's more affective, meaning that it's more emotion-based. So that when they are needing to make moral decisions, they tend to have a bias towards the emotional side of things. And so it's not that they can't reason. It's just that that is what appeals to them most. And so when you think about libertarianism in terms of what Jonathan Haidt talked about in his book, you know, it's the most male. It's that libertarianism is the most masculine of the political philosophies, and that libertarians score lowest on empathizing, and that the other measures that libertarians consistently come out as most cerebral, most rational, and least emotional. So they're very, you know, their IQs help them reason through to their ideals, but it's not really something that appeals to women in general. So I think we just have to set that as a goal for ourselves, as how do we communicate these things to women and in a way that's going to make them accept it. So like, say, price controls. You can talk about price controls all day. It's boring to most women, but if you talk about price controls on baby formula, that might affect how a mom can feed her child, well, you've probably got her attention more at that point.
All right, well, that raises this question. I think people think there are two possibilities. One, if we just worked more on recruitment and outreach, we could get a lot more women, and we're just not doing that. Or they would say, because of the reasons you just mentioned, that's pretty hopeless, so we should just carry on doing our thing and let the chips fall where they may in terms of who winds up joining. But maybe there's a middle ground between those two. What would you recommend?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a middle ground. And I think libertarianism really, really can appeal to women. I just think that, you know, we have to, as libertarians, present it in a new way and maybe give it some life, make it personal for them. And that I think it might help to understand why we need women in the liberty movement, because you think, well, you know, we can just, women aren't that engaged in politics anyways, and maybe we just don't need them. But I don't think that's true, because I'm sure, as you know, that politics is downstream of culture. And women are still the primary caregivers for families and children. And so they're the people that are instilling the values that, you know, are important to us into young children. And that's going to change society, and that will change politics. I love the quote by Emerson where he said, men are what their mothers made them. And I really think that's true. Not that dads aren't extremely important and don't play a role, but in the foundational years, those young years, I think women play the largest role. So, you know, women value cooperation and community. And, you know, as far as what I want in like an anarchist society, if that ever happens, you're going to want those values. Like, it's not just all about being an island. Communities are important to humans, and we're going to need to figure out how to cooperate with each other. So I think that's something that women can really bring and add a lot of value with. I think, too, that you just have to understand that women care about things a little bit differently than men do, right? So we have to start talking about them in that way. And maybe you have to figure out what they're afraid of and convince them that you care too. And it's not all about just the cerebral aspects of, you know, whatever technical things we're talking about, borders or whatever, but make it more human and relatable And that I think you have to be, it's the difference between an evangelist and a teacher. You know, you have to be an evangelist first and appeal to the emotions and the heart, and then you can be a teacher. And something I've sort of seen some men do occasionally, and I don't think they mean to do this, but they sort of shame women for feeling about things instead of, you know, having this what they see as more rational and logical, and women will get to that point, but they have to feel about it first. I mean, I've talked to women so many times, and you know, at the end of discussing something over and over and making good points, and they understand, they'll say, you know, it still just doesn't feel right. And I thought, wow, you know, maybe I need to make it more appealing that way, give it more of an emotional connection. So I guess, you know, shaming women is something that I've seen for that. And I don't think you're ever going to persuade anyone by making them feel ashamed of their values and what's important to them. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, I think it does. I think that's a very sensible way to look at it. Let's wrap up by talking a bit about homeschooling, because you homeschool. I mean, you are like the libertarian, right? You do everything. You do all the things. You have your own radio show. You talk about this stuff all the time. You're doing activism. You're in the LP, and you're homeschooling your two children.
Yes.
So what's that like? How long have you been doing it? Are any of the things that scare parents off from doing it, are any of them valid? What can you tell us?
So we've been homeschooling for about 4 years now. My son actually came to us and said, between fourth and fifth grade, can we please homeschool? He did not enjoy school. He's a bright kid, and he was often bored and just... it wasn't a good, great fit for him and for our family. He spent so much time, even in fourth grade, doing homework that there wasn't a lot of family time, and we were always feeling rushed. So we're like, well, okay, we can consider this. It was, you know, it's really scary. So I don't blame people for being afraid to do it, because it, you feel like you're sort of, you know, jumping off a cliff. And you're concerned you're going to screw up your kid. We're so tied into, you know, public education. So we decided to do it. And at first, we just sort of pieced together our own curriculum, things that we thought, you know, would be great. And for him, that was not enough structure. He needed more structure. So we had heard of the Ron Paul curriculum, of course, and we started using that. And he really, really enjoys it. And self-directed learning is something that I think is a really good fit for him. And as far as our daughter, you know, she's seven and our son is 15, and she has a totally different learning style. So I'm not sure where we're going to end up with her. At this point, we're kind of doing unschooling because she refuses to do anything else for the most part. But I've heard a lot of judgment about homeschooling, and I think a lot of it is invalid. And, you know, the main one that I think every homeschooler hears a lot is, well, what about socialization? As if school is how children socialize. And I don't know, my answer is always, well, what did they do for thousands of years before public school? Like, we made it this far. I think we can do it.
You know? Right. The human race didn't die out.
Yeah. We've seemed to have figured out how to get together and make this thing work. So I don't think that, you know, you necessarily need that. And just that model is not the best. But I don't know. I think I try not to judge people, because we each have our own, you know, stuff that we're going through and family situations. And, you know, homeschooling has been a wonderful, wonderful thing for our family. And I would have a really hard time going back to public school. I just couldn't imagine. But I know that people can't always make that leap. But I would just suggest they, you know, at least look into it. There are so many different ways you can do it, even working, you know, two people working. It can be done. So that's just my opinion of homeschooling. It's really been kind of transformational for our family to be able to spend more time together and grow together and travel and do all those fun things, have field trips my kids love field trips, and they just, you know, you're not able to do that in public school anymore that much. So it's a great thing.
Right, right, right. Well, all right. Well, listen, this is great. I'm glad you're doing all these things. You are what I want libertarians to be, right?
I'm trying.
What you say you believe in, and you promote the stuff, and you've thought it all through. I mean, really, that's what we want. More people like that. So how often does your radio show run?
It's Monday through Friday, 6:30 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And we always try to live stream it on Facebook. And there is an app on our radio station website that people can use to listen to the show anywhere.
And this is Talk Radio 92.3 and AM 760 in Knoxville?
Yes.
Okay. So again, I'm going to link to that at tomwoods.com/1095. I'm sorry if I interrupted. Do you have any parting words for us?
No, I what you were saying about, you know, being a libertarian and doing, you know, all the things that, you know, we think we should do. I just wanted to encourage people that, you know, we each can be a mirror to people, holding up, you know, sort of their own beliefs, especially on the right. You know, you hear people talk about freedom and liberty and that they believe in these things and Christian values and family values. And so I think we have a great opportunity to hold that up to people and to really show them, you know, ask them questions like, well, is forcing someone to stand for the national anthem, isn't that violence? You know, do you think that's the right way to handle it? And just kind of give people that mirror so that they can see whether or not they actually measure up to their own ideals. And I think that's all we have to do. And then that's transformative for them, hopefully. And they'll make decisions based on that. So,
well, excellent. I mean, just great. I'm really glad we had a chance to talk. I guess we met briefly. Was it at the 1,000th episode event?
Yes.
That's a blur. That thing to me is a total blur.
Yes, I can imagine. We met also at the Night of Clarity in Nashville a few years ago.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we gotta get Bob to start doing those things again, just so I can have fun at events. I think
he's so much fun. He really is.
Oh, yeah. I can't say enough about that guy. All right, well, listen, great. Talkradio923.com is the site, but we're going to link to it also on the show notes page. So best of luck, and thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, now, folks, you know that I promote websites that are created by people who listen to the show. And if they use my link to get their web hosting, they get a good price on it, and they get free publicity from me and a bunch of other very, very helpful bonuses that'll get them free traffic, get them up and running quickly, get them help when they need it. They're great bonuses, and you know you can get them at tomwoods.com/publicity. Explains how you go about it. Well, I have to confess, I do not know how to promote this particular website. I've tried. I've talked to the guy. I just don't know how to promote it. The website is thegrayarea.com, but it's spelled G-R-E-I-G-H because his name is Gene Gray. So thegrayarea.com. You just have to see Gene Gray's writing for yourself. That's all I can say. If I try to explain it to you, I don't think I'll be able to do it justice. The site consists of excerpts from works of fiction, published and in progress, poetry, but also, and I would say primarily, commentary on cultural matters, political, historical, even personal matters, much of it intended to be humorous. I don't know what else to say other than I'm just going to have you be surprised when you go to thegrayarea.com, G-R-E-I-G-H, thegrayarea.com. I will link to that at tomwoods.com/1095, as the listener website mentioned. All right, that's it for today, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.